We are in the fall of 78, and we were going to talk about your meeting with the president, which was, from my point of view, a decisive meeting.
Yes, we... This was on the 11th of October in 1978. And Sharon and I had... did we say about the luncheon before we went over there?
No, yes. Well, just covered again. You were at the embassy.
Right, the Chinese embassy for lunch at Perklo. And I may have mentioned as we were walking through that big lobby they have... We had to interrupt the luncheon because the appointment with the president was at 1:15. And although it had been moved up to 11:15, it still wasn't over. Chaitzeman is leading me out to the door, and several paces behind, Madam Lee, his wife, with Sharon. And that's when she said to Sharon, "Will you go into the meeting with the president with your husband?" And Sharon said, "Oh, no, I'll wait out in the lobby." And then she said very seriously to Sharon, "Say a prayer for him." And Sharon says, "Oh, I will wish him luck." No, she says, "More than that, say a prayer for him. Say a prayer for all of us." Serious. I think, was it you who, I can't remember whether it was when we were having these exchanges or in a separate fashion, you said that she had had some connection with a mission school.
Yes, I had said that.
Right. Then, as I remember, you were waiting in the lobby for me.
That's right.
Tell me there had been a switch in plans and that Dr. Brzezinski would be in the meeting, whereas I had expected it would be one-on-one, and the State Department, more important than I had expected it would be one-on-one. And, so we went into the meeting.
Were you upset by that?
No.
I must, I will go ahead and then I will give you the background on this.
If I had thought it would appear that I had connived at it and deliberately misled my colleagues in the State Department, I would have been upset, but I was quite comfortable with the fact that this was a complete surprise to me, so it didn't bother me.
Go ahead, go with it, and then we'll talk about it.
So we went in, and the president was alone when I was ushered into the Oval Office, but Zbig joined us very quickly, and we talked about the timing. We talked about could it be done in the year's end? Was a target date of, as I remember, we talked about was a target date of January 1st, which was very desirable. Feasible, and there wasn't much talk about the salt, the reference to salt, because that had been thoroughly covered before, as I remember it. And then it was agreed, okay, we'll go ahead and prepare a communique. And the president turns his big and said, "Would you follow through on that?" And then Zbig said, that's when I was leaving Washington, and this was Wednesday, and I was leaving, as I remember it, on Friday. And he said, "Well, it would be well if we got your thoughts on paper before you left Washington. And the president said, no, more than that, he said. Let's have a completed communique before Leonard leaves Washington. And Spig looked a little bit as though that was a pretty tall order. But the president insisted. And then he, after we got that out of the way, he then said, is Sharon with you? I said, yes, she's out in the lobby, because I remember the last time I'd been in, Sharon had not accompanied me, and he had reproved me gently that he would like to have seen her. So Big left, and Sharon came in, and we had chatted a few minutes and had some pictures taken. And then that was the end of it.
Now, did Vietnam come up in this conversation?
Well, if you'd have asked me that question a few weeks ago, my memory would have said no. Because I had an inquiry from Elizabeth Becker about this question. She had it wrong that I had sought this meeting with the president in the fall of 78 for the primary purpose of urging that Vietnam not be recognized so that we do not create a roadblock in the path to normalization of relations with the PRC. And when she asked me, was that so, I said no, where I was incorrect in going on to say that there was no discussion of Vietnam. I think that came about when I talked to you. I also talked to Roger Sullivan that connection. Although that was a different matter. But then, thinking hard about it, yes, it was raised, and I gave my point of view that it certainly would not be helpful, that it could cause undetermined difficulty. If during the same period, and after all, we were looking at a short period, 2.5 months at the outside,
right.
if during that time we at the same time were making overtures to Vietnam without any preparation at all having been made with the Chinese until we were ready to begin really serious moves with them. And, as best I can remember, it was mostly an inquiry of me, what did I think, as I remember it, in my expressing that point of view.
Well, as I recall that meeting, it was indeed an important one, and it served two purposes. First, to once again go over what the normalization package would look like. You will recall, given the neutron bomb decision of the president, that I was worried all along that at the last minute there may have been some nuance that he wished to introduce into the negotiations that had not been there before. So I remember preparing two memos, one for the president, then one for Zbig, and then briefing you just to make sure that all three of you would go over the very important issues. And they were as follows. First, would we be content with Chinese acquiescence to a unilateral statement of ours concerning an expectation of a peaceful future of Taiwan? Or would the president at the last minute perhaps decide that he wanted some affirmation from the Chinese rather than affirmation of peaceful intent rather than acquiescence to our unilateral statement? So we wanted to make sure that you pin that point down. Secondly, we wanted to pin down, and that's why the joint communique became important,
right,
and the separate communiques too, and how we had to begin separate to statement. Negotiate that. The second was the arms sales to Taiwan, and whether, again, we wished an explicit Chinese guarantee or whether a unilateral assertion of our intent with the Chinese willingness to still normalize would be sufficient. And you covered that, as I recall,
right,
very, very carefully with him. And third, we went, and so we had to recognize that the arms sales issue was looming up. In effect, put another way, you had one more presentation to go by the time you saw him, in terms of the three, some of our
right
concerns, of
right
our nature of our post-normal. We'd come to the end of stringing the thing out. We couldn't string it out any longer. And your next presentation would be the third of raising of the three issues, right, of the nature of our post-normalization relationship with Taiwan, how we intended to terminate the defense treaty, and unofficial relationship
presence
with Taiwan,
presence on Taiwan.
So we'd covered the three issues. And we had to confront what comes next. And the two things that loom next were clearly the arms sales issue and how that was to be handled, and the communique itself and separate statements that would hopefully not be contradictory. Now, so from my point of view, it was an important meeting to make sure that you took the president through the issues that you saw looming ahead, and as I recall, you did so.
On the question of the acquiescence of, by the Chinese, the non-contradiction of our statement, there was no problem with the president.
Right. He was on. He continued to be on board.
Right.
I remember because I got a reading from you and said, "Don't worry." I mean, your reading was that he's totally on
right
board. He's the master of the issue. But I thought it was important for Zbig to be there to take down the notes as to what the president said so that there would be a good record of the conversation, and
sense
to make sure that the conversation remained on track, but at the same time not become enmeshed in a discussion with SALT. Hence why Zbig and I cooked up, in effect, Cy Vance not being there,
mm-hmm,
because we wanted to make sure that this occurred but not have any sand thrown in the spokes, as it were, sand in the wheels. I was still nervous after that session with Huang Hua that I wasn't sure exactly where Cy fully stood on these matters. So from my point of view, as I say, it was an important conversation to get the president to speak out clearly on what he wanted to have done. Then the second issue was the Vietnam issue. And as I recall, we did want the president to speak on the issue, and it was a very important one at that point. Dick Holbrooke had two meetings with the Vietnamese, with representative to the UN in September, and had the Vietnamese at the end of the second session had dropped their demand for reparation. They then turned to Dick and said, since we have dropped our demand for reparation, let's normalize relations right here. because you have told us all along that's the only thing that is holding us up. And Dick, of course, temporized and said, I can't do that right here. I will be back in touch, and we will begin our discussions of how we will establish diplomatic relations. Then, at the time of your arrival, the situation with respect to American-Vietnamese relations was that we were literally on the precipice of normalizing relations. Now, Dick had built into his September presentation, you will recall, two caveats. First, that should Vietnam drift toward a closer relationship with the Soviet Union, it would complicate the normalization process. And second, if Vietnam sought to dominate its neighbors or tensions in the area dramatically increased, it would be difficult to normalize. So we put two conditions around it, the state of Vietnamese-Soviet relations and of Vietnamese relations toward Cambodia. But in the month of October, and I'm not sure you attended any of these meetings, we had meetings with Bob Oakley in the State Department on how we would open an embassy in Hanoi.
No,
I didn't attend any of those meetings. The claim, how the claims asset settlement would take place. This was really very, very close to a completed agreement. I was sitting there, obviously very nervous. I was not nervous about normalizing relations with Vietnam eventually. I think it's to be lamented that we did not establish diplomatic relations with Vietnam, but the question was one of sequence and of surprise to the Chinese. That's why, as I recall, that we put the item on the agenda for the president to ask your opinion and then to get the president's reaction. And this was not a, this was, shall we say, tough NSC State Department politics, because, and I give my point of view from the NSC, Vietnam policy was never openly debated in the whole Carter administration. There was never a policy, interdepartmental policy review memoranda on Vietnam policy. I had asked Dick on several occasions to have such so that we could have a coordinated policy, and he was not eager to do so because, in effect, he was running it. And I could see that. I mean, I could see his perspective on it. He was fearful that if we opened it up to the whole government, there was still such intense animosity, and if the Defense Department got involved, that...
And
the Congress, there could be no normalization. So he was right in that regard. But as a result, the president still never had a comprehensive paper before him of what even the State Department's policy on Vietnam was. And Vietnam policy was being made through Secretary Vance's evening notes to the president. You know that Vance sent every evening notes. And he would put a little paragraph on Vietnam, and you know how you will recall Jimmy Carter's tendency was a marginal notation of anything that came before him. Good, fine, keep it up, whatever. And so that the State Department and Tsai and Dick were just using this to make their Vietnam policy. And we couldn't get any wedge into this operation at all. And so finally, this big requested a memo from me on Vietnam policy. It went to the president, and it began to jar him into being a little more critical of Vance on his evening notes, but he was never extremely critical on that channel. So we used your visit as another instance of trying to raise the Vietnam issue before the president and try to say, wait, let's try and get something from the president. If he hears the issue put before him, that he will certainly decide to go slow.
Where did the notion of doing the two at the same time, what period did that surface and what happened.
This time I recommended that to Dick. And there were some people over there who thought of it and said, let's try and do it the same time.
Because that I had heard of.
I recommended that to Dick.
I may have heard it from you.
Thought that it would, but I will tell you this, I thought that was a delay tactic on Vietnam, because the track we were on at Vietnam in October was so fast, that was in October, that it was so fast that I feared that we would normalize relations with Vietnam sometime in November. The saving grace, something I will never understand, the saving grace was when the Vietnamese signed the peace and friendship treaty with the Soviets the day before the congressional elections. Why they did it the day before, why they did it the day before the congressional elections, I will never understand. They knew that was on November 3rd, I think, or 6th.
The election was the 7th, and that.
Yeah, November 6th. They signed the peace and friendship treaty on November 6th. And I must say that they knew we were temporizing during the month of October because of the elections. And we had indicated that to them, that we could not really do anything until the congressional elections.
Do you think, had they been given a clear signal in October, they would have changed their planning with regard to the invasion of Kampuchea?
No. I think what they were trying to do was lull us into a recognition before they attacked Cambodia. That would have been ideal from their point of view, but the most important thing was to attack Cambodia. What do you think?
I think so. I think the commitment to the All Indo-China Federation is so strong and so they really have to be blasted off that. And it, I'm inclined to think it would be typical for them in October to say, okay, now we drop this demand, which they had resurrected, as we've talked about before, because they had separated it when our mission was there in March of 77. It stayed separated until they put it back. Suddenly drop it and say, okay, let's go ahead.
Of course, they didn't suddenly drop it. The fact is that they dropped it really, I think, in July.
That's
and in fairness to Dick and to Secretary Vance, I think that both of them knew that the Vietnamese had dropped it. You remember their foreign minister was on tour in New Zealand and let it be known that they were reconsidering their position on reparation. They then sent a specialist delegation to Hawaii on exhuming
the identification lab.
And there they indicated that their reparation conditions had been met, their reparation conditions were being dropped, but we chose not to hear. And we did not send a delegate to Paris to hear it, and strung it out until September. Pretty sure that we would, but what we say publicly is that they didn't drop it in the formal negotiations until the sixth hour of 2 3-hour sessions. Why didn't they drop it in the first? But that's really a rhetorical stance on the part of Dick Holbrook and myself. And the fact is, we were very slow in picking up the cues. And did not do anything to explore it because we didn't want to have it complicate the early stages of our negotiations on normalization.
Well, when Sharon and I came out from the president's office, I met with you to tell you what had happened, and then later that afternoon had a session with Dick Holbrook to fill him in, and then somewhat later than that, 5:15, met with Dick Holbrook and Dick Solomon, and unfortunately unfortunately, whether that, that I don't think that was part of this sequence. I think that that just happened. He happened to be there, or do you think it was part of the sequence? Because that was followed at 6 o'clock with when you and Dick, Harry Thayer, and myself, and an HH, who's HH?
Herb Hansel.
Herb Hansel, right. Herb Hansel. Met to go over the outline of communique.
No, Dick Solomon was there at this point, and I'm not even sure that Dick Holbrook was aware of this. He was there as a special NSC consultant whom Dave Aaron had brought on board. Dave, at this point, was nervous that we were moving very rapidly on normalization with China, but no one had taken a hard and critical look that all the people who were involved were committed to the process and had been involved in thinking through the terms, the agreement, and David wanted someone to ask whether we were being hard-headed. So Dick was in the process of preparing a special study for David Aaron.
And for the vice president.
And for the vice president.
Well, makes sense.
That's right. That's right.
What happened to that special study?
It was completed and was supportive, and is typical of those kind of things, difficult because Dick also sought to keep his relations with me intact while doing an independent study. And I therefore saw it, and it cannot be said to have been fully an independent study. Should have brought someone on who was a little more critical, I suppose. But he had to bring someone else who was also capable of keeping confidence. Not many people you could bring in on a time like that.
And the next day, on Thursday the 12th, I had a session with Paul Warnke and Adam Yarmolinsky, and that turned more, that did not relate to what impact normalization with China would have on SALT II. It was more a recitation of the developments in the negotiations and the difficulties and so on. It was more a meeting of old friends. And
I want to come back one more thing on your session with President Carter. In a sense, this was the last session you had with him when he was really still at a high point in his presidency. He'd come down a little bit in the handling of some domestic affairs in 78, but then you were seeing him after his Camp David triumph. And it was really one of those strong peaks of his, wasn't it?
Yes, the few minutes we had before his big joined us was sort of reminiscent, and it was. I was the one who gave it the flavor that it's going to start to be easier from now on out, as I remember our brief conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he was always serene.
Mm-hmm.
And he was obviously very satisfied, as he had every right to be, with Camp David. But nothing vainglorious about the man in that regard.
Right. But I think it gave him the confidence to take on normalization. I think he probably would have taken it on in any case, but it's important to bear in mind through the next 3 months that we're dealing with a very strong president, one self-confident, and feeling that he was really building toward a fabulous month of December, months of December and January. He thought he was going to get a SALT agreement. He thought he was going to get normalization, and he thought he'd have the Mideast agreement well in place.
Yes, I think that's a very correct assessment. Then the next day, Secretary Vance gave a dinner at the State Department for Joe Peiyuan, who was heading the education negotiating delegation from China, following on from the Frank press visit of the earlier July. And prior to that dinner, I had a session with the Secretary and with Dick Holbrooke, in which we went over what had happened with the President and the aftermath. Only the question of Zbig being at the meeting was not much time spent on that. I think something like, that was a surprise to you, and I said yes. And then I...
Now, did Vietnam come up in those discussions? Do you have any memory? Because Big, the reason I raised this, I didn't know about this part of it, I don't think. I knew we were going to try and have the subject raised. But what Big says in his draft memoirs is that as a result of that conversation, he wrote one of his little short statements to State and to Vance, summarizing a president's instructions on the pace at which negotiations with Vietnam should be carried out, and that it should not occur before normalization with China. I just didn't remember that, or didn't. I didn't either. Didn't remember it, or didn't know it.
I have no memory of it, and I would doubt it. Because Cy's style would. Since I couldn't do anything about the problem anyway, and he knew what had happened to it, he was not one to waste time on, on that sort of thing. So unless Dick may have referred to it, but it was not a major item. Certainly.
Or the memo didn't get to you, didn't get over there by this time. I'm just puzzled by it. I'm going to go back to Spig.
So then we went back.
Now, what did you? You did not leave with the draft communique already completed, did you? As President had instructed.
It was essentially finished.
Yeah, but he had not signed on
it
yet.
No, that was.
It had not gone back to him.
I was still in the country for several days, not in Washington. I was down in Texas and then back in Chicago and left from. Chicago the following week on the 18th, which would have been the weekend, a week to the day from the meeting with the President. And I noticed that on the 23rd I gave a luncheon for Tom Murphy, who was then Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of General Motors and a group, because the flood of high-level businessman was still going. And a reception for the Mississippi River Study Group. That was a Chinese delegation.
Right.
That was coming to the U.S. to study the Mississippi because it was the river in the world most like the Yangtze.
This is the state of China. This is a good story. This was also partly hosted by the Army Corps of Engineers. You remember, Drevo
right.
Corporation, Army Corps of Engineers. The State Department was adamantly opposed to that visit.
Why?
Because it had the Army Corps of Engineers as a one of the hosts. Harry Thayer fought that tooth and nails. And we had to go, Zbig had to take that one up with the President. And we had to have a special presidential decision that this was not the initiation of defense contacts between the United States and China. I worked on that quite a bit of time.
I didn't know that. Then that same day, October 24, the Schlesinger delegation arrived and went out to the guest house and had their welcoming banquet. The Chinese gave that a heavy defense cast. Remember taking him up north to a secret mission to see the submarine, which was not very secret, which I'm sure was for Soviet consumption. And he had quite a press delegation with him, as I remember it. Strobe Talbot,
yes,
was part of it.
Karen House.
Karen House, right. There was quite a few sessions with the Minister of Coal and that woman who's the Minister of Water Conservancy,
Chen Chun Ying,
who was a really strong person.
Frank Ching's aunt.
Was that Frank Ching's aunt?
Yes.
Yes. I'll be darned. I didn't know that. Then during that time, also, we gave a farewell luncheon for Lin Ping, who was going as the Chinese ambassador to Australia. I always had the impression, nothing more than an impression, that he had been around when Wong Hai-rung and Nancy Chen were still very, very strong in the America's Bureau, but had not been, he had been with them, but not of them. And in cleaning house, they got him out of the way neatly before they did the real house cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
That was my feeling about that.
Oh, that's interesting.
His going to Australia.
Now, on the Schlesinger visit, Schlesinger saw Deng, didn't he? Or is he up? We have come to him. Departure here.
Yeah, he'd...
Li Xianyan.
Saw Li Xianyan, so he probably did not.
Oh, Deng,
he also
may have
saw
been
Walker Fung.
Deng may have been off in his trip to Southeast Asia at that time.
Could have been. Yeah, he did not see Deng. And the Xinhua group, which had gone to the U.S., certainly all the signals were flying strong that the time was right. And we hosted a luncheon for Cho Pei-yuan and his group that had come back from the U.S.
At this point, it was during the education delegation, and this was while you were still there, late in October, when Cho Pei-yuan was there. It came with Lien Zhengbao. And Big had me take Lien Zhengbao out for lunch. And I said that I wanted to remind him that I had a conversation with Chun Dai-jung earlier about Zbig's trip, and it was serious, and that I said I wanted him to know that this was an important discussion. And then we started going over normalization, and they started berating me, and I said, look, this is about when are we going to start getting serious in the negotiations and all. I said, we are serious, and you will see that we're serious. But I said, I'd like to know what your leaders' schedules are during the month of December and January. Are they going to be busy? and they looked at me, and they said, we don't know. And I said, well, I want you to know that our leaders are very serious, and we hope that your leaders are not going to be tied up during the months of December and January. was all that I said at lunch. But that was done on Spig's, Spig's instructions. And then it was at this point, I think it was on the Schlesinger visit, that then Lin Zhengbao passed a message to me via, was David already in Peking? I think David Grease was already there.
I think so.
Because I think it was done via David.
Yes, he was there.
And they sent back, and David said, got this strange thing that Lin Zhengbao approached me and said that our leaders do not anticipate a busy December or January.
Yes, I think that David made me aware of that. That response. And I wrote on the 31st of October, same day that we hosted the luncheon for Peiyuan and his group, that Schlesinger is still up. The Schlesinger main party is still up north, and we hosted a reception for the technicians from the two parties, the Chinese counterparts to all the technicians who had come with Schlesinger in the energy delegation. And that was the way that party, it was still, well, scheduled for an hour, but it lasted quite a bit longer. The spirit and the camaraderie that was in that room was truly remarkable. They got along so very well, they enjoyed each other's company, and it was really a celebration. It wasn't just simply a perfunctory thing like so many of those receptions were. I remember one young Chinese, I was a little worried about him because his American counterpart was challenging him. Let's have a martini, let's have a Manhattan, let's have bourbon, let's have scotch. But except after the second or third one, the American initiated it, but I had somebody pass the word, look, but then the Chinese took it up, and he made the challenges. And when he left, he didn't walk out of the room. He floated out of the room. But he held it remarkably well. But the spirit that was engendered it was the first time I had seen such a thing as between Americans and Chinese. And the very fact that on the American side, except for myself, there were no senior officials there. It might have been different had Schlesinger and his senior staff been there, but they weren't. During this visit too, because the Berglund visit is on the horizon, we had a meeting of had the biennial visitation of inspectors from the State Department, but we got along all right with that. Yes, Dave Grease was there because I met with him on the 2nd of November. And then had my last meeting in the negotiating round with Wang Hua late at night, 9 o'clock on the 2nd of November. Excuse me. At which point I presented the communique, and we went through the. I guess we also presented our final point, I think so. Anyway,
that's right.
We made the same summary and the same response, with no indication. The Chinese side of anything different to be.
There's one thing in today's presentation that leaves me unclear, and I don't mean to imply your memory's faulty. To the contrary, I'm sure your memory is immaculate. You say that President Carter in your meeting with him in October, stated that he wanted a communique and that he had a target date in mind of roughly January 1st. What I remember is that when we got the draft communique from the State Department,